a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 185. I mean, just sneaking up on 200. And it just dawned on me. I went back and checked. I scrolled all the way through the old Podbean archive. And tomorrow's show on the 6th of July will in fact be the 1 year anniversary of The Counter Position. I mean, that absolutely amazes me that I started this little project here and I've kept it going for a year. I must like it. Hopefully you guys like it as well. So I say this all the time, but I'm really not kidding. If you understood how hard it is for me to get a habit and keep it. It's like, and just to be diligent and to do it when I'm not in the mood and to do the work that I need to do it when I do it well, you know, and to find a way to do it even when you're kind of busy. And I've had all these, usually like when I have tech problems with something, trying to get something to work on my computer or something, I just end up going, oh, to hell with it. This is ridiculous. We live in a weird world where I have to figure out this stupid thing and make it talk to something else. I quit. But for some reason, just for some strange reason, I have managed to work through most of my tech stuff. Distance interviews is the last hurdle for me. I have to figure out how to get that all hooked up. I tried Skype. I tried to figure it out, and everyone else on Breadbox does this and they all act like it's super easy. It's like, I can't figure it out. It's absolutely ridiculous. So that's my next goal. Maybe for 100. Oh, that'd be awesome. Maybe I can hunker down and get a proper setup and try a distance interview for the first time on 200. If not on not 200, for 1 year anniversary, maybe by 200 episode day, that's probably more realistic by episode 200. But anyway, here we are on the old Counter Position, the day after the 4th of July. I'm sorry, Independence Day. Please, 4th of July, as if it's just some other day, just with a number in front of it. Independence Day. Man, I had a seriously laid back weekend. I'd gotten off of 2 weeks of just double hours and just constant work. I mean, just a brutal schedule for a couple of weeks. And I had no energy to do anything this weekend. Now, as luck would have it, I didn't really have much to do. So I literally just hung out all weekend. I went to a birthday party on Friday night for Peter Zalasko of Catholic News Agency fame. And also, I think he's one of the voices of EWTN radio or whatever. He and I both went to Thomas Aquinas College. He lives nearby. We have kind of the same friend group. And so that was a nice time. He had a pretty laid back birthday party, had some folks over. We made some tri-tip. I made tri-tip twice this weekend, just for the record. So I went to Safeway for Sunday night dinner. I stopped by Safeway after mass, and I went back, and I was so stoked to see that they had two different prices on sale. For the cheaper one on sale was untrimmed tri-tip. Now, you've heard me talk about tri-tip on the show before. There's a culinary aspect to this show, so I'm going to bore you with it. It's this piece of meat that is kind of like, I think it's right on the rear of the cow, like on the hip, basically it's the actual, like the butt, like up against the skin, the fat up underneath the skin. And you cut this one piece off and you cut this other piece off and you cut this thing off the bottom. And what you have left is this triangular piece of meat with a big thick fat cap on it. And they used to just throw it in a hamburger. And then people in a Safeway up in Santa Maria, this guy put one in a rotisserie, and they were all teasing him, like, you're going to be chewing on that thing all day. And when they cooked it nice and slow, it actually was pretty decent. And then over time, they figured out how to use the old school kind of vaquero tradition, which is the Mexican cowboy tradition, and grilling over oak. And so what you do is, if you have that big fat cap on it, you burn this fat cap, right? You just basically start a full-on grease fire on purpose and just burn the heck out of the outside of that fat cap. And you turn it over, sear the other side, then just drop the heat way down. And you cook it for like 45 minutes to an hour, like on super low on that other side. And it roasts real slow. And that fat wants to bubble up and out of the top of the up and out of the top of the tri-tip, but it can't because you've burnt that outside of that fat. And so it trickles back down through the meat. Basically, you created a self-basting piece of meat. And so if you don't have that fat cap, I mean, you can make it pretty good, but you got to work pretty hard and you got to cook it a very different way. So on Friday, we had trimmed tri-tips. I offered to do the grilling for Peter's party. And so they said, what do you want? I said, well, grab me some tri-tips. So they went to Costco, got some tri-tips, and they were trimmed. But they were very marbled. They were really good. They worked out really, really well. They were tasty. But then I found real bona fide. The only thing I really wanted for 4th of July, because I normally go to California for 4th of July. This year, that just didn't work out. And when I get homesick, man, for California, that's what I want. I want tri-tip. And so I didn't have oak. I had to use my gas grill, but I managed to cook some real honest to goodness, properly trimmed, properly not trimmed, tri-tip. And that was, pretty good. So actually I took a little video. It was kind of dark, but I took a little video of the grease fire and stuff. And so when I finally get around to starting to throw some stuff up on the Friend of the Show page, I've got that to throw up there. The 4th, I mean, to say I did very little, I literally like slept in as long as I possibly could. It was just like, I was so tired. I've been recovering all week and from this last week of work. So I slept in, and then I had this all weekend. I had this plan. Okay. And I'll get into this maybe a little bit more intimately later, but I had this plan. I had some questions I wanted to ask myself. I had some writing I wanted to do. I've got some fairly decent sized decisions on priorities and stuff. A lot of options open to me. A lot of the way certain projects have turned out have kind of pushed me to make a decision on and pull the trigger on some other options. And I've been trying to think about whether or not to build a prototype for Calyx in Denver, Colorado, and whether I want to create a space that I'm kind of attached to for a while. And just kind of, if I want, we're still kind of launching this Breadbox Media thing. And so, I'm just like, okay, so do I just want to push all in and forget about the other projects for a while? I just had so many questions in my head. And beyond that, something more, those questions were all, kind of branches on a tree. And the root of all that was, I kind of feel like I'm floundering. I feel like I'm really unfocused and I'm not firing on all cylinders. I'm not doing the right actions for the right things right now. And I think it's a lack of identity kind of deep down. I've been really struggling kind of with this lack of identity and kind of below that lack of identity, kind of a real closeness with God. And so I started reading Discover Your Personal Vocation by Herberto Alfonso, I think his name is. He was like the second in charge of the Jesuit order. It's a really fascinating little book, worth reading. I'd read it before, and I just kind of felt drawn back to that book. And so I was going to read that book and a couple other things and kind of journal and kind of, you know, sometimes I, in the course of a day, I can get some reading done, sit down, a couple of cups of coffee in the corner of a coffee house, just kind of empty my head into a notebook for a while, and I can come up with some perspective, you know. And man, this weekend, I just could not get my head clear all weekend. So I just kind of floundered around going from shop to shop, coming home, you know, hanging out, just like, and just trying to just, I wanted to kind of a mini retreat, and I just couldn't get it done. I just could not get my head clear all weekend. But the only thing I managed to do that I had definitely set as a goal other than tri-tip was I finally got my new air conditioner put in the window. So I bought this super cheap air conditioner because my air conditioner quit, and I bought this little pretty decently rated air conditioner for like $112 at Walmart. And I finally got Perry West to help me drag it up the stairs because my Achilles tendon still kind of messed up. And we got to put it in the window, and I'm not super, I mean, it's really cold right next to it. And I got myself good and cold for sleeping, which was the main thing. It was just, it's a nighttime thing. I hate sleeping with my door open for the swamp cooler. So, I sleep light, and I can get woken up really easily by sound, people moving through the house or something. I have roommates. But so I got the air conditioner in, and it seemed like it worked pretty well. But the room just isn't that cool. It's just like it didn't do the job. But so there you go. There's Chatty First segment. I want to reflect a little bit on some things that I thought about over the 4th, about the 4th of July and how we celebrate and what we do, etc. And a few other little things on tap. So let's go to the break, and I'll see you on the other side. You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so, you know, so over the weekend was the 4th of July. And it's, how to say it is, I get a little frustrated sometimes. Now, I am not some big history buff. Okay. I know very little about the battles and the strategy and the way things went in the Revolutionary War. I'm not coming at you as someone who just reads a ton of history and I'm really into it. I have friends that are kind of military history buffs that play those military history games and stuff. And they're like really into it, and especially like the Civil War. I have one of my mentors is just really into Civil War history and understands the all the strategy and everything behind every little battle and the big pieces on the movement of the pieces on the big board. I mean, he really understands it. I don't. So just so you know, I'm not coming at you as like history guy, but it's interesting. I saw a video on the internet. Now this is easy to do. I mean, you can always, you know, you see these people do this and you know, where they, you know, Jay Leno does it. And there's a guy on YouTube that does it, and I've seen it. Different people do this kind of thing where you go out and you ask a bunch of people a really simple question that it's just a damn shame that they don't know the answer to. And then you just put them on the internet and make them look like morons. You know, and you see that all the time. I mean, the one that was the most stark recently that I've seen was, and I don't care if it was these were the 10 people out of 500. There was a political science major down at, I think it was Texas Tech, went out and just asked everybody on, just stopped people and said, you know, who won the Civil War? And people are like, ah, oh, dude, I don't know, man. I mean, it's like, I slept through that class or whatever, you know. We did? Yeah, we won that one. You know, just like people have no idea what the Civil War was, right? But what really broke my heart is some of the people that had no idea what the Civil War was, that had no idea what was going on, were young black college students. So here's a war that was fought for many reasons, you know, state rights and, you know, and all the, you know, all that stuff. But ultimately, I still contend that it came down to whether or not a good portion of our country was going to be allowed to just continue using humans like cattle, right? It's like, I mean, great, states' rights, all that. Let's have a conversation when you don't want to enslave people, right? And there were young black college students that didn't know what the Civil War was. Now, in some way, okay, one could argue, okay, well, that's a win because we've gotten so far past that reality. But that we don't see that, though. We see everyone talking about race and making race everything, and more and more insisting that everything is racism, everything is sexism, everything is privilege, everything is this and this and this. And then those same people don't. They couldn't tell you what the Civil War was, right? So that was a stark one. But what I saw over the weekend was people being stopped on a beach in San Diego and just asked basically, like, okay, what is today's Independence Day? Yeah, right on, man. It's like, so what did we get our independence from? Who did we get our independence from? What country? Oh man, I don't know, man. It's like, you're going, oh man. I mean, and these guys weren't stoned or drunk. It's like, you know, and it was across the board. It was like pretty little blonde white girl, stoner looking surfer guys, young Mexican dude that was like skateboarding by, all these different people, you know, but they were all probably, you know, early 30s or under. And person after person, and the guy kept messing with him. He was like, okay, look, out of our founding fathers, you know, John Wilkes Booth, Jesse Ventura, you know, and all those guys, I mean, who's your favorite? And people were like, oh, definitely Jesse Ventura, he's my favorite founding father. I mean, like, they had no idea. They didn't have one person who could name a founding father. Now I assume that there was probably a whole bunch of people that were able to answer the question and they don't make the video. But the point stands that there are a ton of people in this world who just have no idea where we've been, have no idea what has happened, no idea how we got here. They have no idea why this is important, you know? And it's just, it's kind of frightening. Now, I saw something kind of similar, but in some way, strangely, happy, some strangely kind of like, you know, the other side of that, because I was watching an episode, which I tell you what, I mean, I'm a fan of Anthony Bourdain's shows. I mean, he's so cynical when it comes to religion and stuff, but, No Reservations and now Parts Unknown. And I was watching a newer episode of Parts Unknown last night with, Perry West. And, Anthony goes with Marcus Samuelson to Ethiopia, to Addis Ababa, and eats and cooks, and they go to his wife's village, and then they go back to like his original village. And Marcus Samuelson is an Ethiopian born chef who was adopted as an orphan by some people in Sweden, raised in Sweden, worked in kitchens all over Europe, and then started Aquavit in New York, and just has been on this meteoric rise since then. He's just a really incredible, really interesting chef. And so they go to Addis Ababa and the capital, and they eat all this beautiful food, and they hear all this cool music, and they talk, and they kind of see what life is like. And he's talking about the history and about Haile Selassie, the king of Ethiopia, and how, you know, and then this Maoist kind of like full on super communist regime that came afterwards. I think it was called the Merg. But what was interesting is they were trying to point out that we don't know what Ethiopia is like now in the West. We don't understand what's going on there. And we just think it's all poor people with flies on their faces out in the rural villages or whatever. So they were in this vibrant, crazy, kind of cool city where old and new exist side by side. But there were these kids who were skateboarders, and they have to get their boards from overseas. There are no boards there. And they're just like, there's just like 200 kids in Addis Ababa that are like full on skateboarders, like with ramps, and they're doing kick flips and heel flips and stuff. And it's like, as a former skateboarder, I was just blown away to watch it. And what was funny is that some of them were doing really old school tricks. Like they were rediscovering. Some of them had seen YouTube videos and stuff, but some of them were just kind of still having that raw engagement with the real, this raw engagement with this object in front of them, and what are the possibilities between concrete or a wood ramp and this object in a human body, right? They didn't have a presupposition coming to them, right? And so they made the comment that these kids don't remember that they've got, it's been long enough ago that all these kids are out there happy and skateboarding, and they don't remember that communist regime. Now, what's interesting is that, they in some way they've kind of returned to a happier time, and they don't remember they're not influenced the way their parents are by going through this absolute hell of this communist dictatorship. And so I caught myself conflicted to where I'm like, I love that kind of a society can renew itself and get past, you know, a rough period or something, and get past war, get past affliction, and to the point that that can be wiped off, you know. And it made me think of Father Michael O'Loughlin. If I talked about this homily, where, you know, you see some of the people that encounter Christ, they just leave everything and go behind. They leave their family, they leave their nets and their business, they leave all these things and they just follow Christ, right? And sometimes Christ heals someone and he just like tells them to just leave everything and go. And then the paralytic, he heals him and he says, take up your mat and go. Now there's a whole lot to that. And actually that was part of what I was thinking about over the weekend, is I was kind of reflecting on that. But so there's a time and a place where it's beautiful to just wipe the slate clean and forget that that happened. And then there's another time and another situation where you kind of want to carry your mat to always be reminded of where you've been. And I think that when, I don't know, maybe I just have a soft spot for the American founding, but I think that knowing that just over 200 years ago, we were part of another country, that there were very clear reasons why we left that country. And there's reasons why people who are trying to just turn us into another European style social democracy, there's reasons why there are people fighting that, because we tried to set something very different up here. That's why they call it the American experiment. Sometimes it's like they were doing something that had not been done before. And to have people walking around in their deep 20s who can't name England as the country that we fought for that we got independence from, that the independence in Independence Day is us becoming our own nation after being a colony of England. That's just freaks me out. Anyway, we're at the end of this segment. Let's go to the break. When we get back, I want to talk about a few more things. We'll see what happens. You're listening to The Counterposition.
And it's dark. Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. So, okay. Before I get too far off of the idea of the political founding, and there's a video going around Facebook. I'll try and put it up onto the Facebook page for the counterposition. And it's a party, and they just kind of walk, there's this party and this guy standing there wearing a British flag on his shirt, and this girl with pretty girl walks up with all kinds of American gear on, and she's like, "Oh, hey Britain, I didn't know you were coming to my birthday party." And he's like, "Oh, hey America, I haven't seen you in a while. Yeah, Canada invited me." And it's this really awkward conversation where this former couple who had a really explosive breakup bump into each other, and he's at her birthday party, but it's America and Britain. It is one of the best pieces of history kind of put into a different form I've ever seen, and it's absolutely hilarious. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's just like, you know, she's like, "I should have listened. France warned me about you. Oh, France was all over you. He couldn't keep his hands off you. Oh, we were just friends. Oh, you, on the other hand, just couldn't keep your hands off India." It's like, oh, it's so spectacular. It's really worth watching. So I'll put it up on the Facebook page for the counterposition, so that you can have a look at it. Really, really worth watching. You know, it's funny. Last night I was sitting on the porch, just, you know, I bought a decent bottle of wine for the 4th. So I watched this wine sidebar, which would be a wine bar. Boy, I'm easily impressed with myself. So this wine, I got this, I've been watching, I watched that movie, Psalm, the sequel, Psalm Into the Bottle, which, you haven't seen Psalm or Psalm Into the Bottle and you're into like food and wine and stuff, you really need to get on Netflix and watch it. They're really, really worth watching. Psalm was, they follow a bunch of people that are trying to become master sommeliers through that really rigorous process of testing and all that. But then Psalm Into the Bottle is, they revisit some of those same people, but they tell 10 stories from kind of the history of wine and the world of wine to explain different aspects like terroir, varietal, aging, you know, harvesting, these different processes. They tell stories, and it's a really, really well done documentary. But they start talking to these sommeliers, and they say, "So, what do you think is like the most underrated, like, you know, your go to kind of just really high value wine these days?" And everyone I was like, Beaujolais. I'd say Beaujolais. I'm like, really? So I'm used to drinking, like, you know, I mean, if I'm going to a party, a lot of times I'll grab that Debeuf Beaujolais Village, because everyone likes it. It's just bright red fruit, you know, really pretty, just goes with everything. You can't go wrong. But I don't really think of it as being like an incredible wine value, right? So, but I haven't really tasted a lot of Appalachian-specific Beaujolais. So I went to my local wine shop. Shout out to Divino Wines on South Broadway in Denver, Colorado. Divino is so good. I mean, it's a really small shop, heavily curated, but you can close your eyes and point. And they always have like 10 under 10, and they have these tags for like daily drinkers that are like 12 or under. And the guy just knows how to buy wine. It's just really good stuff. And so they had a decent bottle of Fleury, which is an Appalachian specific within Beaujolais region. And it was 100% Gamay, like almost all of Beaujolais is. And wow, really beautiful stuff. So there you go. I'm kind of on this Appalachian specific Beaujolais kick right now. So I'm trying to drink less wine, not drink as much, but instead of just like getting a cheap bottle every other night and I'm just trying to, like, you know, not drink for a while during the week. And then when I have a night off or, you know, on the weekend, you know, spend that same money and buy a decent bottle worth tasting and really pay attention to it and take some notes or whatever. Cause I used to sell wine for a living and my palate is just going to hell in a handbasket. But, anyway, so I was sitting on the front porch drinking this Fleury after dinner, and just, it's that time on 4th of July when the sun finally gets far enough down and all the fireworks displays start up. And so it's just like, it just sounds like a demilitarized zone. It's just like explosions everywhere. And you can see the different fireworks from different places in the sky. And, it was really interesting. There was this moment. So the wind picked up really stiff and it was coming from kind of both directions. And we live on the corner where the alley comes up right beside our house. And so you'll get wind whipping down that alley sometime. And I had my American flag, out on its holder, sticking straight out from the house, like a lot of people did. And this flag was just being whipped right and left, just back and forth. And just like, you know, just absolutely horizontal, stiff for a while, one direction or the other. And then there was this moment that, it was funny. It, this flag was catching super intense winds from both directions, but it was almost exactly equally matched. And so this flag was like bored stiff, sticking straight out and just twitching for a good 30 seconds to a minute. It just, the winds on either side were completely evenly matched. And if you weren't paying attention, you would think that this flag was just sitting there gently bristling just slightly in a breeze. But it got me thinking about this with all these explosions going on and how violent it was before and after. And then this moment that's kind of in some way the best we can hope for in this world, as far as like peace, is when somewhere in the middle of all of this crazy, nasty, just forces from different sides hitting, that if we can work out just a moment, maybe a few hundred years in a country or something, where you can work out, a moment where these things are equally matched. And I think that, I hope not, but I sometimes think that maybe America is in that position where it seems so peaceful and we don't, but then now we're starting to have like these little terrorist attacks here and there. And I can remember growing up and just watching the news and seeing like Beirut or Lebanon or some of that, you know, just things on the TV that I didn't understand. Someplace over there where people wear different clothes and there's a lot of sand evidently, and you get blown up if you go get coffee or something, you know, just like over there, you know, when I was in high school or something, I just wasn't very politically aware. I didn't pay attention to anything. And I just remember thinking, God, what if it was like that here? I wonder if there's ever going to be a time when there'll be that kind of violence and suffering in America, you know? And I remember it used to kind of disturb me when I was a kid. Like, what if I went to the 7-Eleven to go get a, you know, a Dr. Pepper big gulp while I'm skating, and like somebody would blow a car up or something. I mean, it's just like, I remember thinking, well, no, that can't happen. This isn't the kind of place that happens. This is America. This is a different kind of place. I don't know. It made me kind of melancholy. And I was also thinking about, you know, these fireworks, you know, just like I said to Perry, I said, you know, isn't it kind of strange that we celebrate by kind of imitating warfare? And he said something like, well, I never thought about it. I guess it is that, isn't it? Yeah. It's like we're making bombs, you know, we're shooting them up in the air and showing explosions. It's like, it's the loud bangs and all this stuff. It's an imitation of warfare. You know, it's, you're imitating the sounds of rockets and mortars and bombs going off and explosions, right? And it is to call us to remember that this thing that we have had to be fought for, and it has to continue to be fought for. You know, I mean, look at World War II. I mean, technically speaking, that wasn't American soil, but when they bombed Pearl Harbor, I mean, we were attacked. You know, well, actually, I think the Japanese actually got onto land, if I'm not mistaken, just north of Santa Barbara at one point, but then left. I've heard stories that there's evidence that there was an actual landing somewhere in California, but they didn't stick. You know, but I don't know if that's true or not. I've heard rumors about that. I know that certainly there was a deep possibility, and there's still some. If you surf up and down the coast and the central coast, you'll see some of these old cannon and tank, you know, these kind of cannon bunkers right there, these artillery bunkers right on the beach, you know, made out of concrete. But I don't know. I just think it's interesting that we, I wonder if people who have been through hell like that recently, the hell of war, if they celebrate by imitating it. I just can't see if you finally got some peace in Iraq or something after big terrorist bombing over the weekend and all that. I can't imagine it. They'd be like, oh, hey, yeah, let's imitate that hell we went through. You know, I think it'd have to take 100 years or so. But, dang, I'm in a melancholy mood tonight. All right, so let's go to the break. When we're back, we'll clean it up. You're listening to Counterposition.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. Oh, I'm lovely. And I'm done.
Welcome back to the Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. Fourth segment, the final lap. The fat shot putter is running his last lap around the open mile. I'm so bitter about that. One of these days, I had this idea that I want to get one of my coaches on the show. Go back and interview one of my, I think coach Henderson is now the principal of my old high school. I want to go back to my hometown. I want to interview under the guise of like, oh, I just want to revisit my roots. I'm interviewing people from my youth, you know, and I want to get Coach Henderson on the phone. And I just want to go, what were you thinking making fat kids in front of girls at other schools have to run a mile? Why would you do that? What kind of sick, horrible, masochistic kind of mentality would you possibly have? And then I'd be, I can get my revenge by asking him that on the air. He'll probably end up, you know, telling me to walk it off or rub some dirt on it or something. it's a strange show today. I admit it, right? I didn't have like a big theme. I kind of bullet pointed all the things that were on my mind from over the weekend. And I was like, I don't know, maybe a theme will emerge on this, but, maybe it won't. So, the last thing I've got to think about is, I had a conversation with a friend over the weekend about community and about, kind of the struggle to create a friend group and to kind of get settled in a way, you know, and it's, and I was telling him that, it's interesting. I'm really starting to get a feel for what it's like to be old and single. It's like I'm 45, about to turn 46. I'm single. I don't have any children. So I've never been married. I don't have any kids. I'm single. And it's like, you know, you have to kind of find some way to make community happen. Or you spend a lot of time just hanging out, you know? So over the weekend, I wasn't really invited to anything. There's, you know, other than that big, the birthday party on Friday, but no one invited me to any kind of like a 4th of July thing. Right. And when I'm in California, I'm either like full on hanging out with the Schneers and cooking and hanging out with their family, and people come over, and it's Matt Schneer's birthday, if I remember right. So it's kind of a birthday and 4th of July thing sometimes. Or I used to go help. There's a giant barbecue at the Canons Regular, the Immaculate Conception, the religious order that I used to live with. And I would usually run the grill for them during the day, and all these people from Thomas Aquinas College would come and all this, you know, and it was a big, big to do, you know. But I'm in Denver now, and I don't really have a tradition, right? There is no tradition for me. And I'm not going to go watch fire. I don't have kids. I'm not going to drag a lawn chair and, you know, as a grown man and go someplace and sit and drink beer and watch fireworks. I'm just not going to do that. I'm not into it. And honestly, it's like if somebody would have invited me to something with a bunch of people that are kind of my acquaintances and stuff, I would have been like, I would have felt like I needed to go, and I probably would have went because I didn't have anything else to do. And I feel like I need to do something because it's the kind of day that you should have community on because it's 4th of July, right? But I kind of probably wouldn't have wanted to go because I was just kind of processing this, talking to my friend about this, and he's younger than me, but was talking about the similar struggle to kind of get a solid group of friends together. And I realized that the last time that I had a really solid group of peers that we were all kind of in a similar place in life, and we spent a lot of time together, and we had a network of really close friendships, was probably like 2005. It was a long time ago. Now, since then, you know, I had a time in California where I was really, really close friends with a two or three families. And I was kind of taken in and made part of their family, so to speak, like the Schneers and the Fikes and the Marings and all those people that I love in Ventura County. But I definitely have very close relationships with people like Justin. I mean, he's like a brother to me. But the last time I was like, you know, living with some guys that I like had really, really close relationship with that were kind of the same age and in the same place in their life as me. And we were kind of doing stuff and cooking, and people were coming over, and we were going and doing stuff together. And there was a kind of a community. I mean, it's been a while, and it's interesting to think that it's like, you know, as you get older, it's like you start finding yourself more and more going to events and like planned things, or you find yourself, you know, hanging out with people that are younger than you. And so like when I was at Peter's party over the weekend, I mean, I was clearly, I think, the oldest person there, and most people there were, not only there was anyone there over 34, 33, maybe, and 30, you know, 33, 34. And it's just, it's interesting. You're kind of like, it's like you're single, so you get to hang out with the single people. But at some point, most people move on and start families and get married and do their thing. So you're constantly hanging out. And I think that it's interesting. I'm at a point where I've reached that moment in my life where it's like, I'm getting too old to hang out with a bunch of people in their late 20s. It was fun for a while, but it's like, I'm getting too old for that. It's weird. I'm like their dad hanging out with them, and they all invite me a lot most of the time, but by coincidence, I didn't get really any invite this weekend, but I get invited to these things all the time. And I don't know. I just think it's interesting that there needs to be some kind of a community form. You know, maybe this is just more, I'm called to build it. The thing that there's a theme in my life where the thing that I long for is the thing that I'm kind of called to do. And that restlessness is the thing that won't let me kind of stop working on it, you know? And I think that this, you know, maybe it's just this community that I'm working on with Calyx, this form of community with this coffee house that people spend time in. And I don't know, maybe, but it just needs to be some way to have it, to kind of connect and find people that are, that in the same position as you, without the weird kind of like pressure of like singles groups or something, you know? I don't know. Maybe it's just time for me to figure it out and get married and have a kid. Maybe, I don't know. It's like, when you get to be my age though, I was telling my friend yesterday, I was just like, you know, he's young and sometimes struggles with the idea of whether it's too late for him and he's messed things up or didn't do enough of the right things early on or whatever. And I'm like, dude, you're so young. I on the other hand, think that sometimes. I'm like, I have just wasted too much time. I should have a PhD by now. I should have a big successful business by now or something. I should have something more than I have. And I've just wasted it. It's just too far. I just didn't do it. And I just, now I get to live with the aftermath of what happens when you don't do it. You know, I don't know that's completely true, but I think that your options certainly start getting, smaller and fewer, not smaller. I mean, sometimes you can kind of start, and I am starting to do that. I'm starting to like use all of my experience to leverage into some stuff that is really exciting. I mean, Breadbox is super exciting and what we're doing is super exciting. And I think that this show is going to just get better and better and better and better. And I think that, especially once the day job goes away and I can focus on my craft and really, really prepare in a deep way to do these shows. I also at the same time, as you might be able to tell today, I'm wanting to get less commentary driven and even less theological, just more and more raw engagement with reality. I want this show to be something that anyone can listen to, regardless of what religion you are or where you're from. And I want to keep touch with the raw engagement with reality, this that I can kind of experience some things that are kind of universal and talk about them, you know? So, I mean, I'm positive in the sense that I think that there's a lot of good stuff going on, but it is interesting to, you know, right about when you reach those mid 40s, you start thinking to yourself, okay, you know, I remember last Lent, I was, you know, kind of making some decisions about things to say no to and things to say yes to and setting some goals and kind of thinking about it. And I, one of the things that I started having to factor in and it hit me is like, how much time do I have left? I mean, I'm not the pinnacle of health. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, how people, you know, let's be optimistic. You know, it's like, how long, let me think about how, you know, I started factoring in. It's like, yeah, I used to want to build this and this and see this done and everything. And I was going to be there for the entire process of it. And now you're not. Well, that's not possible anymore. There just isn't that much time left. Just people don't build things that fast. So I don't know. It was kind of that. That's what was kind of going on through my melancholy mind this weekend when I couldn't get my head clear to make some decisions. It's just like, you know, how do you create some community? How do you do the things that need to happen to make something happen when it's something that normally happens naturally and spontaneously? But well, that's a really bummer ending of the show. I just got really melancholy there at the end, but that's what was dogging me all weekend and why I was just kind of like non-social and hanging out. But anyway, gosh, man, I bummed you out and I'm going to drop you off. Let's pull the plug off the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.